We'll call the meeting to order. The April 2nd meeting to order. We have everyone in attendance. Supervisor Esposito is excused. We have Dustin and Christina, both of our youth and governance, and everyone else here. Approval of the minutes of the previous meeting. That would be the Monday, March 5th meeting. If everyone has received those.
Motion to approve.
I have a comment on those. And that is it important to discuss it right now?
Sure.
Mr. O'Leary, under quite a little bit of questioning, was asked to give his opinion on the lake level and what may affect it. And I asked him point blank, as I sat in that seat where Mr. Frederick is sitting now, he was sitting over there where Mr. Martinelli is. Was it indeed his opinion that if a series of, for lack of a better word, maybe I can be correct here, gates were installed from the wetlands digging into the lake, would that possibly, at least to some extent, mitigate surrounding pond levels of property owners to be affected? And it was his opinion that it would be. So I'd at least like that to be put into the record, and I have a verbiage to reflect that. That's the thrust of it. So when you look at the paragraph that's a review of Katie Park's master plan of the minutes, and the paragraph starts out Chairman Elberman and it goes to the end, I would make a motion to include the following sentence, which said, Mr. O'Leary expressed his opinion that by installing a series of quote-unquote gates from the wetlands to the lake, upland ponds may have their water levels stabilized. That was my impression of what was discussed. And can anybody others recollections or comments?
Yeah, that was what he said. Does anybody have a problem with that being in the minutes?
No.
Okay. Anything else, Supervisor Green?
No, not on this.
Supervisor Frederick made a motion to accept the minutes.
Second. Seconded
by Supervisor Grady. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Use of governance?
Aye.
Chairman, committee members, supervisors, youth, and governance comments. We have been discussing the Katie Park at our past two meetings. At our last meeting, we decided that we wanted to look, and the water level was an important issue there before we proceeded with things. So we wanted to have a meeting out there. We discussed weather. Evenings probably aren't the best, and then to try to proceed with another meeting. But I wanted to see how people felt about a Saturday morning. My move would be not this upcoming Saturday, naturally, but it could be. We could have that posted. See what how people felt if they could make, say, a 10 o'clock in the morning meeting.
I would be in South Bend for the Holy Weekend.
Okay, well, we could do it the next weekend. Or
this coming Saturday?
No.
Because
we'd like to get everybody out there.
Yeah, it's Easter weekend.
Two Saturdays.
My comment, Mr. Chairman, is just for myself personally, due to business obligations. If we're early, you know, 8-ish in the morning, something like that, I'm good. Or if we're taking a look at the afternoon, it's fine. But the 10 to 1 slot is pretty difficult for myself.
Okay. Do people have a problem with Sunday?
No.
Not Easter Sunday, but the following Sunday.
What's the date on that?
The 15th.
Sounds like a momentous
thing. What if it's a Sunday? Are you looking at afternoon then?
Make it 7 o'clock.
Sunrise service.
Well, in the morning, I would think. So 10 o'clock on the 15th? Ray, if we could get that advertised.
So as a regular committee meeting, as well as a forum and so forth. Okay.
We would meet, well, we should ask Mr. Rudy and get us in there.
Well, if I'm back, I can get you in there.
Well, Nick, somebody.
Nick will get you in if I'm not here. I should be back by 10 on Sunday. So, somebody will get you in there.
Somebody open a gate.
Yeah, we won't have a porta pot or nothing in there, but.
Well, tell everybody to stop on the way.
Or find your favorite area.
Right. Care to designate an area at the park we meet at?
At the main entrance. You know, down at the parking area in the main entrance. Right. Okay. That's all I have. Any other committee members?
Well, you know, is this your last meeting with us, or?
I guess I'll speak.
Yes, sir.
Well, I guess it's all right. I think with the end of the county board term, I think it's the end of our term. And I don't remember when, I think it's either May our term ends or April. I don't exactly remember the date, but it's been an exciting year, I would have to say. I served on legislative last year, and it was kind of a different experience, and I served on this committee, and it's been a fun experience. I've learned a lot, different functions of our county, from the golf division to our highway department to our parks department. There's a lot of things that you don't know about until you actually sit on a committee like that. It's been a real honor, and it's been fun serving with you guys as well. And so this is one of the things I'll miss about being in high school, as the opportunities like that. So thank you.
I feel the same way. I've only been on it for 1 year, but I've learned a lot, and it's been a great experience, and I think it's prepared me well for the future, so thank you.
Well, thank you both, Dustin and Christina. We've really appreciated your input and the smiling faces here at the meeting. So it's very enjoyable to have you. Right, Frederick?
And Dustin, it's been a fun 2 years. You've been following me everywhere. I was his liaison last year.
And he still turned out that well.
Against all my best work, you know.
But in June, you should have your new committee members.
Right. So. Well, we don't know. High expectations now. Any other committee members? Citizens' comments would be next, then. Any citizen that would like to address the committee on any issue would have 5 minutes to speak, and we just ask that you give your name and address before you would address the committee. Any citizens' comments? Yes, sir.
My name is Emil Krieger, and I'm a resident of Paris Township over here. My address is 2375 176th Avenue. And I'm here tonight. I want to talk about the Red Course out at Brightdale Golf Course. I was on the time clock out there for about 17 seasons, and my last season there was in 2008. I was a ranger there, I think, the first 5 or 6 years. After that, I was a shift manager then for the next 11 or 12 years. So I pretty well know the golf course. A little background on myself. I came out here from First National Bank in 1971, opened up the trailer right across the street here, and was the manager of that branch and bank for 20 years. I retired in 1991, 1992 or 3. I went to work out the golf course. And so as a shift manager out there, I had a good advantage because I probably knew two-thirds of the population in two or three townships out here in the county. And so I think being behind the counter there for that many years and around that golf course, I think it's a bad decision to close up an existing nine-hole facility. I know the rounds are there. Our peak year was 98 or 99. We did 104,000 rounds of golf just at that golf course. So the capacity is there, and the people can be there, and the people that can run the thing. The problem is, those years was the same thing. There was never any proper promotion of that golf course. Probably about 10 years ago, to give you an example, a full-page newspaper ad was put in the Chicago paper down in the Korean section of Chicago. And for two summers, we had busloads of Koreans coming up there on the weekends, paying the full board, which was like $45 or $50 at the time for a cart and around 18 rounds of golf. And they came, they plunked down the cash, and they were good to get it. They were a problem in some ways because of language barriers and all that thing there. My point is, though, that there is not enough promotion of that golf course. And being behind the counter, you would get comments, and I was a shift manager, so I was always behind that counter, and my regular days were weekend days, in the daytime, in the morning, at your busiest times out there. Okay, just to not ramble too much here, you get to talk to people. People come in. The complaints come in when there are some, whether the golf course is too fast, too slow, grass is too high, too short, too long, whatever. You hear all that. But you also hear all the comments that come from out-of-town golfers, and they come from quite a ways away. The only reason you know where they come from, number one, you see their name on the cart slip when you rent the cart to them. So you know that they'll come in, they'll make some remarks, and they praise the golf course. They wish they had known about it sooner. And all these things, you get calls on the telephone. It was not promoted enough to generate capacity, and the capacity is there. We had 150 carts. Those carts should be on the golf course by 10 o'clock on a busy Saturday morning, and they usually were. So it's there, and I, as an example, you're talking about tearing up that nine-hole golf course and taking half of it to provide a driving range. In all my seasons out there with driving range on the golf ball, with golf balls, we never had a problem with that range. There are six or eight pads out there. That's all that's been there for all the years I was there. We never had a real capacity. If we had five or six golf outings on a Saturday morning, enough. Then all people came at once, so they would be backed up. They'd have to wait till their tee time came, so they'd go and hit golf balls. You got a putting brusher, a practice screen there. You could go on a busy day, you wouldn't find four or five people on that practice screen. My point is that people did not come out there to hit golf balls or to putt around on a putting green. They came out to play golf. And so I think to go to put 15 or 20 or 30, however many pads you're going to put there to whack golf balls, that's a losing deal. You can go back to records. We had a bin of golf balls right there in the pro shop. It's always been there. We probably, if we put out on a Saturday morning, if we had 300 golfers on that golf course, then the rounds of golf records will show that from 5 o'clock in the morning during the season till 12 o'clock noon, we would run between 300 and 400 rounds of golf every single Saturday and Sunday during the summer. My point being that we had that bin full. There's probably about four bags of golf balls in that bin, which I don't know how many are in a golf ball, but we would stack up the buckets on the counter, probably 25 buckets, and that would last all morning. That tells you how busy the driving range is. And we would have that many people out there. Parking lot was full to the woods by 10 o'clock in the morning. The last three summers I've been out there, the parking lot doesn't get the halfway mark full. A lot of empty spots there. That's when everybody should be on the golf course at 10 o'clock. Nobody's leaving yet. They're just getting done the first rounds. So what I'm still trying to say, the problem is not there. There is a facility there. It's not being promoted to get the people there. Other courses have got it. We used to have 30 leagues out there. There are no more 30 leagues at that golf course. Some of those leagues have gone to other golf courses. I don't know why. I hear from people. I see a lot of people. I've known a lot of people who golf. Something's not right there, but tearing down a golf course is not the answer to saving money. I don't know what it costs to run each park in the county park district, but there is no revenue source from any of the parks that I'm aware of, and yet it costs money to cut the grass, maintain the parks, and no money coming in. My impression when I started to work at the golf course that the courses were created to ensure that the citizens of Kenosha County have affordable golf privileges. That's my understanding why the courses were built. In order to maintain that, if you eliminate these courses and chase the people away, number one, you have to be competitive. Spring prices come around, you should be in line with the other golf courses. We weren't. We were always too high. That's the one thing I hear always every time someone runs into me. How come they're charging so much at the golf course? I said, I don't know. I don't set the price.
I'm going to have to ask you to wrap up. I let you go a lot longer than 5 minutes.
Okay. Well, okay. That's all I've got to say. I think that course should be maintained as it is. To spend $500,000 to save $75,000 and spend $500,000, according to the newspaper, to build a practice facility, Bobby Capoon doesn't do that type of sensational business with his driving range. He's been there a long time. I think it's a mistake. It should be really thought over a lot better. I think the money that should be spent for most. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other citizens wish to speak? If not, citizens' comments are closed. We're going to move on. I'm going to ask if there's any problem with the committee for us to move Mr. Schilling up from sewer pack. Old business parks for the follow-up review on the parks and open space plan, and then we can proceed with our agenda as it's listed. Any problem with that from anyone?
It's fine.
Mr. Schilling.
Thanks.
Then you can, then you're free.
Then I'm free. Just got some wrap-up things to talk about. You should have gotten three things in your packet. The first thing I really want to talk about is that I wrote up a short insert to describe the public informational meeting that was held back in March at the Nature Center. It's a one-page sheet. I thought the meeting was pretty good there. Lots of positive feedback. There was one specific suggestion from someone that the plan, the county should consider some kind of a trail connection between the identified trail corridor system identified in the plan in Kenosha County that would link to the Dutch Gap Forest Preserve area in Illinois. A large, almost 800-acre area with a trail system that abuts Kenosha County. And the way I wrote that up there, I left it as after that, considering that suggestion, the committee, my thoughts were on that would have been, since it would almost certainly, if you considered providing some kind of connection there, it would almost certainly be an on-road connection. As such, my thought was that be something that should be considered as part of the separate planning effort that's going on, a countywide bike plan, and that's where that would be addressed. That was my thoughts on it. I don't know what the committee's thoughts are. I think it is a good suggestion, because it's not only that Dutch Gap Nature Forest area there, there's about three other ones that are right down there that are connected by trails.
And do you have that listed in what portion here?
The text?
Yes.
It's a separate page, one-page insert. Public informational meeting.
Okay.
Yes. So I left that open-ended to see what the committee's thoughts.
So where does the Dutch Gap start?
It abuts. If you take it's MB, MB comes down where that leaves the state. That's where it starts, and it's about a kind of irregular shape, but it's just under 800 acres that abuts. Well, there's probably a quarter mile to a half a mile that abuts the state, and it works its way south. The Dutch Gap Canal, I think, is what gives it its name that goes through there. But it's a big, lot of open area there too. But I think they're doing a restoration, a lot of trail systems in there. There's some wetlands in there too, but they call everything, in Illinois, they call everything a forest preserve, regardless of if there's a forest there or not. But.
So what we would do would be to just add this to our future suggestions on what we would do.
Yeah, I would just add on to this to say that that since it's likely to be an on-road connection, that should be taken into consideration in the separate countywide bike trail plan that's being done now.
Right.
After preparation.
Anything from the committee?
Thank you.
So I think that's how you would word it, and mm-hmm. that's how you would do it.
Yep.
Okay.
I guess as we go here, I motion and second to approve the proposed text. Unless you want to do it all at once.
No, we'll do that one. So we have a motion to. To add that connection between Dutch Gap, is it called? Dutch Gap?
Yep.
Into our bike trail future planning.
I'll make such a motion, Mr. Chairman.
Second by Supervisor Grady, second by Supervisor Frederick. Any discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Motion carries. We'll continue.
Continuing, then there's another insert. I think we talked about this early on. Here on bold, it says status of 2000 plan recommendations. You guys get the comment that it's great to do these plans, but does anybody ever do anything with them? So I propose that we'd add this insert text that goes back actually at the end of chapter 3 that talks about the status of the year 2000 plan, which was done by the county in 1988. And all I did was include things that were in that inventory chapter. Some of those were specific recommendations in that original plan. So I just bulleted points. Some examples, I didn't intend to identify every bubbler that was proposed or anything like that. But the acquisition of the West End Park property, partially, you know, some of the development of the West End, and then some acquisition of other parks and natural areas that were recommended in that plan, just so that we can say that things do happen. Sometimes not as quickly as we'd like, but it's just to give some examples of what was accomplished since the other plan was prepared. That means, all right, with everyone, I take a motion to include that in the text.
Moved by Supervisor O'Day to include that in the text. Do I have a second? Second by Supervisor Getz. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Through the governance?
Aye.
Okay.
The third part then is the last chapter of the report, the summary chapter. And it's no new information. It's just a brief summary of the entire report. One thing I did want to ask, as you indicated, the West End KD Park, that's one thing. We consistently refer to that park as the West End Park. Are we okay with that in the report?
Yeah, we have.
I know KD Park. And we included recommendations with respect to the West End KD Park. And we have a placeholder in there that says that the master plan is under preparation, and that would define this plan as far as the specifics. We also included proposed additional lands that would be added to that KD Park that would not only expand the park, but also provide for other access points to the park.
To the west, then.
To the west. I'll leave the West End in there. And, but anyway, this is just a summary, brief seven-page summary of the plan. I got nothing. No new material. And this would be the last chapter of the report. If he's got any questions or something they thought was lacking.
Supervisor Grady?
Just a question on the bottom of page 3. It talks about isolated natural resource areas. It's defined as being at least 5 acres in size. Are these individual areas of at least 5 acres in size?
Yes. Those are isolated pockets of woodlands or wetlands or combinations.
Is there some criterion or rationale just, you know, for public record here as to why 5 acres, why it's not 10 or 2 or...
Well, our environmental corridor criteria was developed back in the 60s, and at that point they developed that criteria. The biologists that were involved, the planners and the biologists were involved. The plans, you know, we don't try, our plans are our communities plans typically don't try to preserve every little pocket of wetland or woodland, but to establish what's a meaningful area that could support some type of wildlife habitat without too much disturbance, and the biologist came up with that 5 acres being the threshold.
Do that be carryover from when the documents were first prepared in the 1970s or so?
Yeah.
Okay, that's my question. Thank you.
Any other questions or comments? In fact, we have a motion to approve the summary.
Motion to approve.
Supervisor Frederick, seconded. Second. By Supervisor Getz. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Youth and Governance?
Aye.
We carry.
Now, the next step would be for the document to go to the county board.
Correct.
From you guys. So, one thing is, I would look for, now that the whole plan document's done, I would look for a motion to approve the entire plan document by the committee and to recommend it be sent forward to the county board for their consideration.
Moved by Supervisor Getz to do so.
Second.
Seconded by Supervisor Grady. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Youth and Governance?
Aye.
So then the question is, when would it go to the county board? And what does the county board need for consideration? It ranges. Sometimes we do a 2-page text, 2-key maps as a summary. Sometimes we just send them the summary chapter. And other times we go back in and fix everything and print off a draft report to provide to the county board.
The summary chapter has been enough in the past.
Okay.
With a brief explanation and a lot of glazed eyes, and it's over. I'm just being serious. We tell them this is needed for us to apply for grants and things, and it's...
And the draft report is online.
Right.
So if someone wants to see the pretty maps, they can go on there.
Yeah. Right.
So you say the draft report, that's the full, thick, entire body of work?
Yep, all the chapters are on the county's website.
So interested persons can actually seek that out for themselves.
Yep.
Right.
Good.
So, I guess Ray can check and see when they want to have everyone on the agenda.
I would think, Mr. Chairman, we'd want to do it on the 17th, the last board meeting of, well, the committee's still intact and everybody.
Right.
No, that won't be. That'll be all new people that night.
Is it? Do they get salary that soon?
Yeah.
The first meeting after the election, they did.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well,
the first meeting is Wednesday night.
That by that meeting, everybody would know.
Right. Very good.
We're done on Wednesday night.
That is it. So after the election night.
So we could do it that night.
Sure.
Yeah.
17?
17? Yeah.
Then you'll have not only glazed eyes, but some dizzy heads.
Is that Tuesday?
Yeah. No idea what we're talking about.
And would the committee want me to come there and give a brief overview, or
yes,
or unless the staff wants to do it?
I think we want you.
Thanks, Dave. You'll be doing it.
That is a shot. That's a shot.
Nice try.
So, thank you very much.
Okay, thanks.
Okay.
Great working with you guys. See you in 2 weeks.
So now we'll move back to the front of the agenda here. Tom. Facilities is first this evening. Old business, we have a bunch of updates.
Mr. Chairman, the Courthouse Molinaro Restoration Project, as many of you have already seen, we with the help of Parks and the Highway Department, saving some money, doing things internal for the county, keeping people working, they were able to take out the old landscaping around the courthouse. The next steps there, they did it before they got busy doing their stuff, so that's why we did it at the time we did. We're engineering the lighting, we've gone over landscaping internally again, and with UW Extension with Barb Larson. So we're working to get all that in order. It should all be complete by the end of July.
Is there a landscape plan for that, or what's the...
Yes, there is.
Who put that together?
Actually, Mike Strandt, who is the head of maintenance at the job center, he actually has a side business of landscaping. And actually, with Barb Larson and UW Extension, looking at the different possibilities, we actually... Barb had looked back at the historical original landscaping around the courthouse. So we're looking at the different possibilities, but we do have a driving layout.
Good. Because that landscaping was horrible around there in recent years. And they should look at the historical. That's a historical building. So I'm glad that you're doing that. Now, before they proceed, who's going to proceed and how are they going to proceed?
Well, we were going to, again, to save money, we were going to do it all internally, utilizing some work crew under the direction of Mike Strand. So he would be spending some time at the courthouse directing the installation of the landscaping.
So if Frank's talking, Mike Strand, he is a, I wouldn't call a landscape architect, but he does run a business on the side, has for probably 2 decades, I think his family has. So he's a very experienced, real good guy. As far as the work crew, sounds a little too cheap, but it's really not. We're going to use the guys that have really been working out pretty consistently at the Gulf, again, under Mike's direction. Mike used to be the chief building custodian at the, probably back when you were the clerk of courts. He was the building chief there, and he tried to take care of it when he was there, but he's been gone for a number of years. He's at the job center now. He really wants to make sure that it is done and cared for and installed. He's a very high quality kind of a guy. So I'm confident that he's going to, working with Frank and them, that they're going to keep on top of it. But by the same token, we are going to try to keep and make as much use of semi-skilled labor that has kind of been trained out in the Gulf to help him out with that project.
Because that's a class building, and we can't have just a schmaltzy little thing done there.
He's drawn up. He's got a draft plan, and it's not. We just met with Barb literally this afternoon to kind of get her feedback on how to fine tune it. We're going to sit down, and so it's not a done plan yet, but it's pretty well drafted. It's drafted and it's pretty solid. So we should share it with the committee.
I think we should share it with the committee, because all respects to the extension, they don't know a lot about landscaping either. You know, they know about plants and they know about horticulture and things, but I mean, landscaping a historical building takes some expertise. And I think before anything proceeds, it should be shared with the committee.
We can get it for the next meeting because we should have the plan firmed up enough that we can bring it to the next meeting.
Cool. Good.
I think one of the things we'd like to keep an eye on, just to be appraised, is the whole maintenance aspect. I'm sure that's being designed into it. I know that's one of the things we want to look at as well. Design's one thing, but upkeep is another.
Yeah, and it was just horrible before the last.
You've hit on a very key point that we keep fine-tuning with Mike and with Barb, and the maintenance aspect. You know, where do we have that balance between something that, you know, suits the courthouse, and it's importance for Kenosha County, and something that is as easy on maintenance as possible.
And winter maintenance as well. You got a ton of snow. You don't want to break your flower beds.
Correct. So we're looking at the different species that would be lower maintenance, and we just went through this with Barb. You do mulch, you do ground cover. The pros and cons, maintenance-wise, pros and cons, look-wise, pros and cons. So we those have been heavy in our discussions.
Because people don't understand some of the history and what people tend to do, and what was done the last time on the courthouse was some just junk ground cover, and things that don't even go with the building. And when you talk about low maintenance, some people get bored with some of the old things that used to be done. The old things that used to be done were done because they worked. And Japanese use junipers, that type of thing, that sometimes people stray away from now. Some of the horticulturists want to get into all kind of extravagant ground covers that just aren't appropriate at all for that building. And that's why I think we should
just look. I think, and just to give a plug for Barb, she did an excellent job researching the original architecture.
That's the way to do it.
Landscaping, you know, of course it was 1925, but at least we knew what was there and we could take a look and balance.
Right.
So maybe when that comes back to us, you could at least just give us a primer, not the entire thing, but just a flavor of what was there back in the 20s when the...
Sure.
It is interesting because when we took the trees down and cleaned it all out, we tried to do it as quick as we could with the weather cooperating and so forth, but we didn't get a ton of phone calls, but we got some. Usually from staff, courthouse staff, and complaining, you know, the beautiful, beautiful trees. And I don't have an eye for landscape, but I know enough to know that what we had down there. Now that it's been gone for about a week, I think that we're getting more comments now like, wow, you can see how beautiful the building is because all the crap is out from in front of it.
Well, that building doesn't need a lot of landscaping. That's the big mistake that a lot of people do. You know? As they do when it doesn't need it. I did a place in Lake Geneva called Lorimore that on the east shore probably 25 years ago. We actually found the original plans for that building, and they were done by the man that had done Central Park in New York, and the plans were still available. You know, so sometimes the old history is really, you know, neat to see.
Yeah, we didn't actually find the plans, but found the pictures of what it looked like and some just a short blurb from the architect about, you know, why he did it that way.
Big
basically not to cover up the building.
You got to look at maintenance and the building. Yeah. Start planting a bunch of ground cover around there. I mean, I do that. I make a lot of money doing it. But if you don't have a staff that knows what they're doing it, that's not what you want to do. So.
And that's been the concern.
Yeah, that's what it looked like now. Looked like hell the last 15 years. Well, great. Move on then.
Radio towers.
Radio towers, next.
So hopefully everybody got a chance to review the... this is kind of follow-up. I think we talked about the towers in general the last probably 3 or 4 months. We're really zoning in on the 60th Street Tower now. The overview in the memo that I put together gives a pretty good summary of things, taking into account where the tower's condition is currently. And although it's the engineer that did the structural analysis says, you know, as it currently stands under specific and relatively unlikely loading conditions, the tower is not safe. Bottom line is that there still are issues there that need to be addressed. So. The executive really would like to attempt to address this now that we know what we're dealing with, that we really should make an attempt to deal with this year before next winter season. There wasn't anything specifically budgeted for this because we didn't know exactly what we had until early this year once we got a chance to climb the towers and see exactly what we got. That said, we've got a good handle, I think, on what we would need to do from an engineering, from a site analysis standpoint. As far as the nuts and bolts, what has to go into in a technical analysis to identify a site, identify a specific kind of tower that will cover us well into the future. You look at towers with a 75-year lens. You put up a tower, you expect it to last at least 75 years. So that's kind of the lens you have to look at these things with. I've got some preliminary cost estimates for things. Working with Ralph Evans from Evans & Associates, he's the communications engineer we worked with on the safety building and putting together the migration plan from the old to the new. I did a really, really good job with that. As far as the funding options go, talked with the finance department as recent as last Thursday. I think we were on the phone with Gertson and Barna to try to figure out how, as part of the closeout, the budget 2011 closeout, if we
we could identify as many pieces as we could to carry over and identify as potential sources of funding for this project this year. I don't know that all the details have been worked out yet, but I know that they're planning on having something to the Finance Committee this week that will cover that base, the funding base. And a piece of it will be, again, if you guys had a chance to read it, a reference, something that we found out about fairly recently that's going to be happening in Pleasant Prairie. We're not directly involved in it, but it's something that's happening in our community, that ATC Corporation is going to have to build some infrastructure. I believe it's part of the whole nationwide smart grid that's being installed. And they're going to be coming up from just south of the border through Pleasant Prairie with some infrastructure right along the railroad tracks there that's going to connect up to the Pleasant Prairie Power Plant as part of a formula that's built into a statute. The county is going to be receiving, they're estimating at this point, $340,000 for that work, just doing that work, and it's considered in compensation for environmental degradation to the community by having this kind of infrastructure. So that has not been fully approved, but it goes, I think in May, I was told by somebody at the PSC that it will be going to the Public Service Commission for final approval. And so that's probably a piece that's somehow going to get thrown into the pot, is that money. From a project schedule standpoint, this would be aggressive to get this done before November 1st would be a target date, but we could do it. The key will be, one, identifying potential funding sources, and two, identifying a potential site to put it, because we know that the 60th Street site that the tower is currently on is not going to be a viable option for us. We just started to kind of entertain talking to other municipalities. We've got a map and identified all the municipally owned land that's in kind of an area that would work from a communication standpoint. And we've just started that process, but we would really accelerate that. I've got a meeting scheduled actually Wednesday this week to meet with Ralph Evans and kind of develop a game plan for that part of it. The siting and the funding will be the two biggest things. All the technical stuff can pretty much be worked through one way or the other. That's an overview of the whole thing, where it's at.
And when you said the city has multiple things on that tower, so we're hoping that if there's some land that either we own or they own, that because their fire department relies on that and their...
And the PD.
PD.
Yep. And one of the things the PD has wanted to do for a number of years is go higher on the tower with some stuff in order to get... There's more dead spots in the city of Kenosha now than there is in the county of Kenosha for radio communication. And if they were able to place their antennas where they really need to do it at the right height, they would eliminate those dead spots. They've instead had to come up with some expensive band-aids. They've got something at Tremper they put in last year. There's something on the north side. From the old Pepsi-Cola, by the old Pepsi-Cola warehouse. They've got some band-aids they put in place that are not working well. And the bottom line is they've got a horse in this race.
Yeah.
This is something they really need to work with us on.
Because they might have a piece of land near them.
Yeah, they've got property. The city definitely has a piece of the property that could potentially be.
Just from what we know so far, how important is it to have a physical location fairly contiguous to where it is now?
I don't know the whole story yet as far as that goes, but I know that from an elevation standpoint, it's in a pretty good spot. The land is definitely the highest land east of the interstate is right along the Highway 31. That's the old, I forget the name of it, it's a geological term for that ridge. And that's about 740 to 760 feet along that ridge. This, right where the 60th Street Tower is a few blocks east, there's about 708 feet, 710 feet, pretty much in that range. And we're going to need to go up in that area about 330 feet. So if we were able to locate something out on that ridge along Green Bay Road, that would probably be the best east of the interstate. If you start to move it further west to like one of the water towers along the interstate like the city's got, that now poses a coverage issue because you're now, as far as KPD and KFD goes, you're out further from the area that you need to cover. So I don't know the specifics, the details of all that yet, but the initial conversations I had with Ralph Govins are that moving it that far west isn't probably going to give them the coverage they need to cover the city part of things.
So your thought is along Green Bay Road or a little bit east?
Yes. And that's a fairly central location right now. If you moved it way to the north side or way to the south side, not so good. But where it's in between Highway 50 and 158, that's fairly centered from a north-south standpoint.
Is it really a big push to get this done in 2012? I mean, it sounds like the tower is sound enough for the time being.
As Mr. Reeder describes it, it does not meet strength requirements even in an unloaded scenario currently, but that then really means if we had, I think I told the committee before, is if it's got 3/4 inch of ice radially and a 45-mile-an-hour wind, the probabilities of it withstanding that or in a summertime event where we got a 90-mile-an-hour peak wind, those two events, which are fairly unlikely statistically, but stranger things have happened in the last few years. Either one of those events could pose risk to that tower. And if that tower goes down, it is the heart as far as linking up with out here and even linking up to Silver Lake as well as all of the city communications for KFT and KFT.
Last question, we'll get off the subject at least if someone else wants to ask. Do we see the use of these municipal towers for government entities in general? Do we ever see partnerships with private things for microwave, cell phone, or are they not mixable, or how does it work?
There is, but there's potentially a conflict when you go that route. There's other things that get lumped into the equation. Now, the one thing we did do is, if you read it, it's fairly detailed, but one of the things we did do is, Evans has identified that if we take 100 foot off of that tower, the existing 60th Street tower, which drops it out of the range for us to be viable for what it is we need to do, and there's some other modifications made to support it, it would then go from a 295 foot tower down to about a 200 foot tower. At that level, it's still commercially viable for most of the cell stuff in that. So one of the things we want to look at is it going to make sense to completely abandon it, take it down, and throw it out? Or is, once we lop off that 100 feet, is there enough to work with that we could at least rent that out for a commercial application? Because there is potential revenue sources. I know that the Kenosha Water Utility just put up a tower. Either they put it up last week or it's maybe going up this week. Totally for a private.
Isn't there something going on in Washington Park also?
There was something that they went back and forth on. The city was
AT&T.
With AT&T, and I think it got flushed and then it came back. I think that that's back on again now, isn't it? Yeah, it's back on. Again, that tower is solely going to be used for commercial, but the city is going to benefit from that with the revenue stream.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right, we'll move on to Brookside.
Brookside, what I tried to do there is just keep you up to date with it boils down to two issues at Brookside yet. It's the work above the attic that we need to address in order to come up to full compliance with our last survey. That's actually proceeding pretty good. We've gotten in that email to Rob at CG Schmidt, that basically outlined the game plan and what we're trying to do there. And we've, since this was written March 8th, we've actually gotten an engineering judgment from a manufacturer of fire-stopping materials, as well as an architect from A2K, Jeremy Bartlett from A2K Architects. He is writing a letter of support for that engineering judgment that we're going to put to the state. And then the state, if they should bless this, because they've kind of actually got an interest in getting this. It's one of those gray areas in the code, and we're proposing to define exactly how it should be handled. And once that's done, then C.G. Schmidt is going to do all this work above the attic on their dime, with the exception of the purchase of the doors, the access doors that go between firewalls above the attic. So this one's pretty straightforward. The work above the attic, I think we're going to get done, and it's going to be pretty straightforward. And when it's all said and done, I think that it'll be pretty clean. The one that still is going to be kind of a bugger is the drywall issues that were identified, where things weren't, drywall screws weren't mudded and seams weren't all taped above the acoustic ceiling in the resident rooms and the hallways. I think that we've come up with a game plan as of last week to address that whole issue. But we're still going to have to kind of negotiate that out with C.G. Schmidt and everybody to figure out how we're going to do that, how we're going to tackle that part of the project. This we haven't been formally cited with right now because we were cited in the survey, but because of a technicality, he cited the wrong statute or something, it got tossed when we appealed it. But that basically just bought us some time to work through how we're really going to address it, because the next time he comes through, which will probably be in December, he'll make sure he uses the right statute site. So that's why we're still pursuing this one, but there isn't a time frame. This other one, the attic work has to be done by September 1st, and we hope to have it done actually in May if we're lucky. The drywall one, we'll take our time and work through that and hopefully get as much cooperation as we can from the contractors and architects from 16 years ago to cover as much of this as they will. They've been good to work with so far. So it's ongoing, but that's kind of where those two things are at.
Any questions on any of that?
Just a question on the doors here. These six doors, 24 by 48, these would actually be access doors that people would go through?
Yeah, the ones I'm talking about there, there's two levels of doors. There's doors that are up in the attic that go through smoke barrier walls that literally from a catwalk to another cat. Those are the ones that we were cited for. He didn't cite us for the ones that actually allow us access to crawl up into the attic. But they're not compliant either. And for them to be totally compliant, they have to, in a fire event, be closed or close automatically. And the ones we've got now are just really hinged. You walk up and you actually hook them so that you can get your stuff up there so you can do your work. So I think we've come up with a way to address those doors and still make them workable so the guys can get up there when they need to change filters and do other maintenance activities up there. Because that was a concern. That you could have them code compliant, but you couldn't use them. So.
Any other questions? Corporation Council building.
Dan, I just wanted to give an update because I know it's everybody's hope and desire that we are able to get this thing on the market as soon as possible. But I went through with Tom Schlieff, the historical director, or director of the Historical Society, and Nancy Weatherhead, and Ron, we went through that about 2 or 3 weeks ago. Well, probably the 23rd, or just right before that. Just to take a tour and see how much stuff is actually in that building. And it is amazing. So if you, again, had a chance to read through this, it kind of outlines how much stuff is really there and how it really is a matter of most of the stuff has to be in an environmentally controlled, not like a super sensitive, but just environmentally controlled environment. It doesn't appear that the space in the bottom of Anderson that we were hoping to fairly quickly, cheaply, and easily get make available for storing the stuff. After going through there and learning a little bit more about the history of it in terms of the water and some of the other things, it's just not an appropriate place to try to store this stuff. So, bottom line is there really isn't any good existing spaces to store this stuff right now. We looked through Kemper as well to see if there was places that were appropriate. There's some really nice places in that building, but they shouldn't be used for just storing stuff. They have potential to be used for something that adds a whole lot more value. Not that that's happened yet, but it would still be, wouldn't be appropriate, I think, for long-term storage. In any event, where I kind of summarize it is on the last page there. We really need to work with the society to help them get their stuff out of there as quickly as possible. I did push Tom that he needs to put a game plan together for this, what they call disascension, which is basically sorting out what stuff you're going to keep and what stuff you're going to toss. They really need to get aggressive about that because it's going to be a long process given everything they've got. And they really need to start on that process. And then if we can help them to identify a space somewhere, either through another municipality or through a donation of space from somebody. Whatever we can do, we need to help them get their stuff out of there so we can get that building on the market, emptied out and on the market. So this is,
I don't know if Ray, Tom said he had maybe looking at UAW also. They had a building separate from their main building that potentially would be a spot.
That would be, that's one of the ones that was bantied about. There's that building, the Pepsi building that the city's got. There was two or three buildings that were mentioned as potential. Yes, the building, not the local 72 headquarters, but behind that, there's a building, a small building, potentially.
Some of the stuff is potentially going to go into the Civil War Museum for storage, too.
They're cherry picking. They're taking all the guns.
The other thing that we're trying to work for is they've been working with, there's a person at Uline that they're working with to get hundreds and hundreds of boxes donated, and looking for bubble wrap too as a donation, either from Uline or possibly from Sealed Air. And then there's a foam, it's not bubble wrap, it's just a thin foam. You saw that upstairs in storage, and trying to get some of that, because they're going to need tons of that stuff to box all this stuff up.
It is amazing how much stuff.
I don't know if anybody's ever been on the third floor of the Corporation Council and see what's up there.
Yeah. It's packed. It's a season-long episode of Antiques Roadshow.
Or Hoarders.
Or Hoarders! right?
Some of that's going to go.
Right, that's what Tom said. He figures 25-30% of that.
That's what the hoarders do.
So that's kind of where that's at for a moment.
All right. Brookside Air Handling Units.
This actually from the bid in the specs we presented last week, everything was put on order. We've got some preliminary that's going to come in, you know, the third, fourth week in May. We're just waiting because they're coming from two different facilities, rooftop units and the condensing unit for the kitchen. So actually by next meeting, we'll have a firm date for you.
Then the demolition project, that's just cleanup right now, correct?
Yeah, Ron.
The demolition project contractor, Mason and Sons, had a prevailing wage complaint lodged against them. They were able to clear that up with the state, and so the state is using them. They're good to go. We're looking to go with the addendum number 2 on that project, which would do be the parking lot repair and the curb and sealing off the easternmost driveway. And that should take place probably around the 16th of April, depending on when the asphalt plants open up.
Okay. Yeah, it'll probably be later because the asphalt plant, they're still telling us the end of the month.
Okay.
That's when it'll hold down. Yeah, that's pretty much it. That looks
like it. Before we go into business, can I bring up one thing? Parking structure.
Parking garage. I know after I put this together, I forgot. Mead and Hunt had a scoping meeting with them 2 weeks ago, and have the options pretty well defined now for handling everything as far as gate controls, lighting options, as well as security. And I just sent him an email this morning that I want to have the bid documents, draft bid documents. They are about a month behind right now on that. I was hoping to have bid documents by March 1st. I want to have them, I think I told them, by the 13th,
if I remember right.
Yeah, next Friday. So that's where that's at, is to get bid documents, and the goal will be to get that project. Well, we got to then send the bid documents to the state for their approval, but it would still be the hope that we, in early May, would be able to get the bids out for that work to be done. So the target for construction is still August of this year.
Construction or completion?
End of August completion, but construction to occur, I guess, late July, but be complete by end of August. That's our target. That's what I've been advertising to everybody. So I want to get the gates at a minimum have to be done by then, so we can really get a handle. So I'm getting calls almost weekly now from people down there. with the parking situation.
Well, that's your earliest possible convenience for myself in particular, and I'm assuming the committee would like to see what the plan is, number of spaces, arrangement, what the whole thought process is for fees, how the plan is going to play out.
That's all part. We haven't seen anything from them on the fees, but they're going to bring us fees, a survey from southeastern Wisconsin, so we can have some guidelines for that. The thing, I don't know if I told you, when I went down there, Gary and I were down there for a meeting, and we had a few minutes, we went over, we counted the spots that were open in the metro right now. There was somewhere between 50 and 60 spots open when our building was completely full, because the only way they can park in the metro lots is if they buy pass. So they're parking for free in the parking garage. I'm hoping that we put the controls in and we charge whatever we end up charging, but that's going to start, they're going to start to take some of that surface space, so that building, the parking garage population goes down. That's the goal.
Thank you.
All right, we'll move on to the plumbing issues at the detention center.
We have some money in the budget this year to address some plumbing problems. We have a major problem with controlling the hot water for the showers and sinks and all the dorms. It's been an ongoing issue since the building was opened. Since we added the D-dorm area on, it seems to have gotten much worse. Called in a plumbing engineer to take a look at this, and he devised a three-step fix for the situation. First step would be to isolate the D-dorm from the rest of the building loop. Put it on its own hot water loop because it's so close to the boiler room. For anybody that's been there before, it's right next to the boiler room. We're going to, I finally got the prints back. We're going to call in some plumbers and get an estimate of what that will cost. It should be less than $10,000, and we maybe might be able to get that done by the end of next week. If that solves the problem, we'll be good. If not, the next step would be to do the same thing for the loop that controls the kitchen and the medical wing, put it on its own loop with a circulating pump to speed up the return. Again, if that takes care of the problem, we'll stop at that point. If not, the third step would be to replace all of the faucets in the showers to the building. Because of the design, some of them are leaking through and we're getting some cold water feedback, and that's pretty much stopping the return flow to the boiler room. As we make progress, we'll report to the committee and let you know how it's working out.
Good. Any questions on that?
The only quick thing I'd add is that one of the things that, you know, this has been a problem for a long time, and it has gotten worse, as Ron said, as time's gone on. Fundamentally, I don't think it was designed properly from the get-go. But I've had words with that plumbing engineer that designed that 15 years ago. I've already had words with him a couple of times. In any event, we're getting pushed out by the ICE folks, the immigration people, because these guys file grievances, the inmates get to file grievances, and they're doing another inspection in April, in a few weeks. So we want to make sure that we get something done on this so they can see that we haven't just turned a deaf ear to this. We really are trying to get to the bottom, and I think we do. I think the incremental approach that Ron talked about, we're going to get it straightened out. But it's just, again, it's another design issue that just wasn't correct in my mind.
Okay. Thank you. New business highways. We've got a resolution before us this evening that is something that probably a few of you have seen. I have, or a couple of us have, where we've done transfers of property with the and highways with the city of Kenosha. In a normal situation, it has saved us money in the long run that the city takes over the maintenance. We did it, I believe, with Gordon Foods, Gary, and we've done it on some major projects. So Mr. Sipsma, I'm hoping, is going to explain to the committee why this is a good idea, and then we can explain to the rest of the board why it's a good idea. So, Gary?
Sure. If you had a chance to thumb through the intergovernmental agreement, which is attached to the resolution, I think the first thing you'll notice is that it's has been written by two attorneys. Bernie Vosch on the county side, Ned Antranium on the city side, both did a very good job of protecting the interests of the county and city respectively. So there's a lot of wording in there. I guess I'd just like to do a brief overview of the content of the agreement and certainly can get into any detail questions you may have. The first part of it, the purpose, is to improve the roadway conditions, address the urban density, address school expansion traffic, and handle residential and commercial traffic, and probably one of the more important things is to encourage future economic development on these segments of highway. On page 2, the description of the two highways, first Highway K, beginning at 60th Avenue in the city of Kenosha, and then moving westerly to the east frontage road of I-94. The second segment is on Highway G or 30th Avenue, beginning at Washington Road and heading northerly to Highway E. Part 3 of the agreement is really the main part of the agreement, and outlines basically what the county and the city are each responsible for. Both segments, both Highway K and Highway G, are very similar in the agreements. The wording is almost identical. There are just a couple of differences that I'll mention. First off, on Highway K, the county's responsible for the right-of-way acquisition, the engineering, the different studies, and the plans and specs for the improvement of Highway K, and of course the ultimate reconstruction. The reconstruction on both of these segments will be done in smaller segments. And on Highway K, the first segment that we're doing in 2012 this summer is from Highway 31 to the UP crossing. And then in 2013, from the UP railroad crossing to Highway H. Those are the only two planned improvements that we have on Highway K. And by this agreement, when those are complete, they would be jurisdictionally transferred to the city. One of the differences in the Highway K agreement is that there is some planned development along the segment between the two railroad tracks, between UP Railroad and the CP Railroad. And if at such time that the city enters into a development agreement with the owner, developer, the county would get reimbursed for the construction cost that would be associated with any agreements that the city have with the developer, which is commonly done in many of the larger developments. When the construction's completed, the city takes over jurisdiction, which basically means they are, from that point on, responsible for all the maintenance and any of the issues involving access and basically anything, all those items that go along with jurisdiction of highways. Highway G, again, going to be reconstructed in segments. Probably something that you wouldn't be aware of is on 30th Avenue. The County Trunk Highway actually starts at Washington Road, and if you look, if you drive that area and go past Gateway and that, you'd never think of that as a County Trunk Highway. It looks just more like a city street, but in fact, it is a County Trunk Highway, and it's an indication that this agreement is way overdue. I mean, this really is something that that should have been done a long time ago, and it's a good thing that it's finally put into a form that you can consider for approval. On 30th Avenue, this summer, we are going to improve the segment between 15th Street and 18th Street. In 2013, we're going to improve the segment between 18th Street and 22nd Street. All of these projects, both on Highway K and Highway G, are converting these from the rural type two-lane highways to a four-lane urban type road. So they'll when we design these roads, we try to project traffic out to about 20 years. So you know, once we're done, you know, they're going to serve the public for many years to come.
You have a question?
Yeah. Now, is 30th Avenue going to be the same as Highway K? You said four lanes, bike lane, and sidewalks are going to be done by the city, or is it just Highway K going to be like that?
Highway K is going to have a 10-foot-wide multi-use asphalt path from Highway 31 to Highway H. Highway G is going to have that same 10-foot asphalt multi-use path on the east side of the road that will actually extend from 22nd Street all the way to Highway E, and that'll be on the east side of the road. And on the west side of the road, from 22nd Street to 15th Street, there'll be a sidewalk. So a little bit heavier pedestrian use on the 30th Avenue project. On both projects, there also will be bike lanes on both sides of the road, and that's to accommodate the current requirements for pedestrian bike use on all roads that we design and build now.
Is that a 5-foot width for the bike?
Four. 4 foot on each side for the bikes, and that meets the current design standards. And in addition to that, there's the that does not include the gutter pan of the curb and gutter too. So essentially, it's about 5.5 feet from the curb head. Lastly, part of the agreement is that I think you probably have all heard about the issues at County Trunk Highway L and 39th Avenue. As part of this agreement, the city will take over jurisdiction of all traffic control associated with that intersection, and the county will continue to do the pavement maintenance, such as plowing and that type of thing. But anything to do with traffic control will be transferred to the city, and they've indicated that they are going to, at least on interim basis, install four-way stops at that intersection until they can complete the appropriate studies to determine the long-term traffic control. So that's it, and hopefully, anyways.
So, Gary, what? I know it's laid out in here, but we're going to be bonding over a period of 5 years. we're going to do this over a period of a couple of years. What is going to be our cost, and then what are the benefits? That's going to be the main question.
Sure. The planned improvements are being completed this year and next year. This year, the Highway G reconstruction cost is estimated at approximately $1.7 million. And the Highway K reconstruction is approximately $2.6 million. The funding source on Highway G, the $1.7 million, is county funded, and it's in the 2012 capital improvement program. The Highway K project is 80% federally funded, so of that $2.6 million, 80% federal funds, 20% county funds. The final two segments, one on Highway K, for 2013, we're still doing our engineering, but we're estimating that at about $3.3 million. And the Highway G project in 2013, we're estimating at about $1.56 million. Both of those anticipated funded by the county.
And what was the K one for 2014?
2013, it's $3.3 million.
$3.3 million.
So that's county dollars.
Correct.
So then the big question then is the benefit.
Right. Well, the benefit, we look at this collectively, rather than, I guess that's the purpose of having an intergovernmental agreement is, what's in the best interest of both parties. And by transferring these highways, the biggest benefit to our department is the efficiency involved in maintaining these roads, where where we have to send fairly extensive resources to these sites, particularly in winter, to do maintenance. There's a lot of travel time, and frankly, when you get these type of four-lane urban type roads, it's a heck of a lot of work, and the city, just from a proximity standpoint, can maintain these roads much more efficiently, and over time, an urban road or urban street like this is a lot of maintenance. I mean, there's going to be traffic signals, there are going to be street lights, there's going to be a lot of storm sewer, sanitary sewer mains, water mains, and they're all those urban type amenities that the county just isn't, that's not what we're set up to maintain, and there, all of those maintenance items in the long run are expensive to, so there's a I briefly had mentioned that the city will control access, which any future development, all of the planning issues and developer agreements and all that, those type of things will just stay in the control of the city. We'll be not involved in. And like I said, when we look at this collectively, we see it really in the public's best interest from an efficiency standpoint. That's really what the right thing to do. I don't know if that answers your question.
Yep. And the question will be asked, and I know the answer. is why not just give it to them the way it is? And the answer is they wouldn't take it the way it is.
Correct. Yeah, this has to be approved by both parties. There, you cannot force anyone. Nobody can force anybody to take jurisdiction of a highway. I mean, the state can't force the county. The county can't force a town or a city. Right. It has to be mutually agreed upon and approved by both the county board and the city council.
So we'll open up to questions and discussion from the committee. Supervisor Frederick?
What we discussed earlier, is there, because we're dealing with Highway K, there's going to be, especially not maybe this summer, but the following summer, there will be that the owner's neighborhood's only going to have one way out.
Right.
How, is there anything that can be done for them so they can get out of that subdivision at all? Because that's a fairly decent size. If there's only one way that everybody in the morning has to get out, we're going to have some issues right there.
Right. Yeah, and I have some information on that. We haven't gotten any real detail about improvements other than some pavement marking things that I know we can do, and I'll forward those to you and the committee. It's kind of a different situation in 2012 than it is in 2013, and there's other things that are going to impact that, and mostly having to do with other construction in the area. So we have, for example, this summer Highway 50 is going to have a resurfacing project on it, and you know, maybe the people that leave the subdivision aren't going to want to head to the south if they can avoid it. They may want to go to 158 if they're, like, for example, if they're getting out I-94. And then next year, actually the intersection of H and K will be under construction. So it kind of flip-flops then. Maybe, you know, we got to try to get them to head to the south instead of the north. So there's a lot of factors that are going to play into this, but we have done at least some groundwork and some, we've looked at it close enough to have some discussions on improvements. It could be anything from just some signing and pavement marking to putting in some temporary traffic signals. You know, there's a number of things, of course. You know, they all have a cost associated with them. And temporary traffic signals, you know, you're probably looking at, you know, $50,000 to $75,000. But, you know, if, you know, it may be needed and worth it. So we're definitely going to, we understand the situation there. You're right, there's, I don't know how, I didn't count the amount of residents, but there's got to be over 100 residents that are going to be reduced to one access point to the highway. So
because then a couple of years down the road, then Peterson will only have one access point out, the same one over on Highway H. So we'll run into that same issue then a couple of years down the road.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah. Yeah, and our traffic engineer did do some preliminary work on it. I'll forward that to you so you can see what some of the issues that we've identified and some of the possible ways we can mitigate those.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Any other discussion? Questions? Supervisor Coleman?
On the funding, I was reading the resolution. You said the 2012 portion of Highway G is 1.7. We had 1.2 in the budget. I'm just trying to figure out, is this 2012, it's already in the budget?
Yes. Yeah. There's other carryover funding that's make up the difference.
Supervisor O'Day.
I'm totally in favor of this, as far as I'm concerned. The more roads we get rid of, and the city itself, particularly. Is there anything else on the horizon with the city and with Pleasant Prairie Summers to get more roads off of our books and more onto theirs?
The only other active project we have is in the village of Pleasant Prairie, and that involves Highway EZ or 39th Avenue between 89th Street and Highway 165. That's that 39th Avenue, and that segment is still County Trunk Highway EZ. We're looking at trying to get some funding to improve that segment to four lanes all the way, well, right now from 93rd to Highway 165. We're working with the village on funding sources, and if we're successful, then we'll basically do the same thing where they'd be expanded to four lanes and then jurisdictionally transferred to the village. And both the village and the city have been, you know, really, really good to work with. And, you know, it's nice where, you know, everybody can look collectively at what's in the public's best interest and get these things accomplished.
Any further discussion? Questions? Motion to approve.
I'll make the motion to approve the intergovernmental agreement.
Moved by Supervisor Frederick. Seconded by Supervisor Kohlmeyer. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Youth and governance?
Aye.
So, for approval. Gary, some of the questioning could get a little in depth on this. We could be there Wednesday evening.
I could. And otherwise, I'll talk to Bernie Vosh, too, I mean, and make sure he's...
Okay.
Because he wrote the thing. He knows it.
I usually bluff my way through it, but...
Yeah. Okay. I can do that.
Well, I can tell the committee right now that there's going to be opposition to this on the grounds of our unresolved intergovernmental agreements with the city of Collision. I've gotten a few phone calls from supervisors. I said, we'll probably pass this evening, but then we'll have to debate it on Wednesday evening. But there's more than one supervisor concerned about the health department money, and so we'll bring this to the county board and you know, let that debate happen there. So I have the original here. And now the director's report. Gary, do you have anything?
Just a few things. You might notice the I-94 projects are underway. They've got traffic shifted over now. The Highway 158 southbound exit ramp is closed until mid-June. It's the Highway 158 southbound exit ramp, and the Highway 50 southbound entrance ramp is closed until mid-June. They were going to close Highway 50 tonight at 8 o'clock to demo the one of the bridges, but that project's been postponed. That won't occur tonight. That'll occur tomorrow night, and then that's the westbound bridge tomorrow night, and the eastbound bridge will be Wednesday night. So Highway 50 at I-94 will be closed overnight at both on Tuesday and Wednesday instead of Monday and Tuesday. Just salt usage, just a little bit of follow-up on some information I'd given you earlier this year. We certainly can still get snow this winter or this spring, but based on the forecast, it looks pretty unlikely. So I think we're pretty close to our final tally and salt quantity. This season we used 4,938 tons. Our yearly average is 7,320 tons. So we're at about right around 2/3 of our normal year. So yeah, we're know, obviously less than average, but when you add up all the small snows that we had, you know, it was we're still fairly busy throughout the winter. By no means the least amount of salt we've ever used in a year, and by no means the most. We've used as little as 3,400 and as many as 12,800. So. Then just lastly, I was just going to pass out some information. It's something that, you know, we don't see too much, but there's it's a outline of all the bills that the state legislature has enacted in the 2011 and 2012 legislative session. And these are all having to do with transportation and particularly traffic safety issues. The first page are all of the bills that have been enacted into law so far in the 2011. Seems like a lot of the issues involve the weight limits on roads. They're actually becoming more generous with the heavier loads and the size of loads that that can legally be hauled on highways. Other things like the issue with concealed carry involves vehicles to some extent. Most of the first page were all in effect in 2011. There's, if you go into onto the second page on the top, there are two laws that are becoming effective very soon that are kind of interesting. The first one that authorizes local governments such as county to appoint attendants at, to control traffic at special events. Would basically, what that does is if the county so chooses, they can train people to how to control traffic at special events and then appoint these trained personnel to actually do the traffic control. And second, it's actually not in effect yet, but as soon as it's published, will become in effect, and that prohibits instructional and probationary license holders from using mobile phones while driving. Period. So. That's going to affect a lot of people. The exception would be to report emergencies. And then the last enrolled bills are all still ones that are under consideration by the state. But so, just kind of an interesting list. Some of the things that you probably don't hear a whole lot about that are new laws in the state and affect traffic safety in the county.
That'd be great. Questions for Mr. Sipsma? For that, we'll move on.
Just a question, sir, no rant. What do we have currently in the state for selling? We allow doubles, right?
Yes. Yes.
Triples or not?
No.
Okay. The 70 feet here, that isn't really saying this is enrolled. Senate Bill 422, that's not really going after triples. That's a different type of thing.
Right. I believe the currently at 65 feet, so it allows another 5 feet, the trucks to be 5 feet longer. And that would, I believe that it would affect any semi-type truck.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right, we'll move on. New business parks.
Attached most current copy of the Pringle Nature Center minutes in your packet. Out on the bike trail, I got a call from a woman who said there was many volcanoes on the trail. And I went out there and took a look, and some of them did look like that, and others looked like goosebumps. And the highway paving foreman came out and looked at it and said what it was. When it got really hot, weeds had germinated underneath the pavement and caused the bumps. And he just went out with the road roller and just flattened it all right back out. Not that it more might germinate under there and do that, but right now it's looking good. Our playground equipment, Miller & Associates figures that they'll have their portion of the equipment installed by mid-April. And I got a call from Game Time today, and that equipment was in a semi sitting down in Dayton, Ohio, and will probably be delivered tomorrow or the day after. So I'm thinking by the end of April, all of this equipment will probably be installed. The Pickering Springs Dam, Bridge and Roadway Projects. We opened the bids for the dam bridge project last Friday. The lowest bid came in, depends on which estimate we looked at, about $80,000 less than what was estimated, so that's good. The roadway and parking lot bids will be opened this Thursday, the 5th of April. So far, everything's looking on track. Silver Lake Trail Project, an engineering consultant was selected, and we're moving along. We've hired a company to do an archaeological survey of the site as required by the state. Down at Kemper, the roof repairs are going real well. Right now they're waiting for a mason to come in. He has a little tuck pointing on the north cloister, and then the stucco on the northwest corner of the Faulkner building, and some repairs up on top of the Faulkner that were temporary patches have yet to be replaced with permanent patches. And also there's a door jamb and a storm door that's sort of shaped like this, like it's, you know, top of a church window that had to be custom made to be replaced. So other than that, it's looking good down there. And that's about all I have.
Thank you, John. Want to tell them about the gas thief?
Pardon?
You want to tell them about the gas thief?
Gas thief.
Everybody might be interested in that.
We started noticing that either somebody was filling their fuel tanks out at Fox River starting in December and either not recording the gas or it was going somewhere. So we figured we lost, I think it was between 100 or 200 gallons in December. Well, then we started trying to figure out what it was. You know, you always look to your own, so we thought, we got an employee. Well, we took measures to eliminate that. It wasn't employees. So we were trying to figure out how they're getting gas out of this 500-gallon tank, and because all the pumps are shut off, there's no way to turn them on. It's a keyed switch. But what this person was doing was coming with a pipe wrench and a pump and five or six 5-gallon cans at a time. So when we figured out that's what was going on, Nick Murphy, the foreman, and myself, one night we decided to have a pizza party there and catch these guys. Of course, the sheriff's department said, you just tell us when they're coming, we'll take care of the rest. So me and Nick, we're sitting in the shop eating our pizza, and it got, you know, this was in February, I believe, and it was about 10 after 6, and we didn't even get our pizza ate, and we see three flashlights come through the woods over to the gas pumps, and there was no street light on them, so we call the sheriff's department. 20 minutes later, the sheriff arrives, the gas thieves are gone. They didn't catch them. They brought out the K-9 unit, they brought out everybody, and lit the place up and still didn't catch them. So Nick Murphy was going to go back. We kind of started patterning it, and we could see the guy was coming about every 5 days. And every time he'd come, he'd take between 25 and 30 gallons of gas. So anyways, the one night Nick Murphy was going to do it again, he went there, and he'd given the sheriff's department a key to the shop, because they said, when we have time, we'll stake it out too. Well, Nick went there, and there was a detective there, and he says, I got it tonight, go on home. So Nick went back home. About an hour later, both Nick and myself got phone calls to come on over there, and they caught him. So the guy came in, the deputy or the detective let him get all set up and went out there and busted him. So we've got that solved now.
He was carrying gas cans, if you know Fox River Park, where the center maintenance building is, from over by the Dairy Queen, the parking lot over on that side of the road.
It's a one-man job.
Well, we saw three flashlights. We think we put a security light lighting up the gas pumps. What we figure is the other two were smarter than this guy. They realized the jig was up when they saw the light, but this guy didn't get it. So, and he didn't turn anybody else in.
He was from Receive County.
So. I wouldn't care about that.
Well, I think we carried him over to the parking lot too and set him on a brush, and then we could go back and get his vehicle, because if he carried all that gas that far, you're right.
Any questions for John? Thank you, John.
Good work.
Old Business Golf. We had a referral back from the Finance and Administration Committee on the resolution on the status of the Red 9 golf course out at Brightondale. The what do we have from the Finance Committee here? Supervisor Grady, Supervisor O'Day. The main concerns there, possibly you could fill us in on, and then we could.
I think the mood with the Finance Committee was that, you know, it had a certain amount of merit, but it wasn't fully fleshed out in terms of the
cost,
big thing, Finance Committee, of course, cost. And I think that's probably number one.
Yeah, from what I was told, it just seemed a little too vague on what this practice facility would cost and what we would save, that type of thing.
I think they wanted also some projection as to, on the revenue side, what type of income you could drive from people who would be attracted to a golf practice facility in addition to just the regular golfing experience.
Pleasure, guys.
Yeah, I think I attended that meeting as well, and I believe that they felt that there just wasn't enough information to go forward with a resolution to that we had presented. So, so they, you know, it was recommended that it be referred back to us, and with the direction, I believe, that we do further investigation into if what would be the cost of the practice facility, what would be the revenue that would come in from it, is this the right particular time to do all that, etc. So,
right.
And just to reiterate, I just want to say that I have been contacted by at least 25 to 30 people about this Red 9 constituents, and I have not had one person that thinks we should close the Red 9. Everyone that has talked to me has said that this is silly, that we should keep it open, and I mean, these people are not golfers. Some of these people aren't golfers. Some of these people are just residents of Kenosha County who know the golf course, know the area, and just are not happy with any decision to close the Red 9, particularly at this time, and particularly, I mean, they see the focus, or what they've been telling me and what I've heard, is that we shouldn't be doing anything until the debt service is paid off, and once the debt service is paid off, then take a look at what direction the course should go.
Yeah, but
continue to operate it way it is.
But you know this isn't going away, so.
No, I know, but I just want, you know, I think that the committee needs to know that people are just not happy with the decision to close the Red 9.
Well, I've had a lot of, but they're all golfers, you know, that are, so I mean, I'm not getting any phone calls from people that aren't golfers. And the golfers that golf at Brightondale. So, I mean, I know we're all aware that you're going to get from the people concerned, that's what you're going to hear from. But I think as a committee here, it's not going to go away. So the possibility, I know, Dan, you've put together numbers. We've got numbers on what a facility would cost as far as the practice facility. And you know, I'm not convinced either that that's the best thing to do out there. So I don't think anybody's convinced 100% of anything. Dan, can we put together numbers on what we would project as far as revenue from a practice facility? We don't have to solve anything here, but we know this is open for 2012. So if we can, as a committee, you know, decide that we want to get some type of projections for revenue, I think also the... I don't know if the Finance Committee was given the numbers on what we had projected spending on the Red Knight that evening, if it stayed open.
I don't think so.
I think we were... I know we were given those numbers. Were they, Dan? Or?
Yeah, they were all included in the presentation.
They were.
So there was also revenue projections in there, too.
So, then, in your opinion, what were their objections?
In my opinion, they wanted more detail of the revenue, I guess, is what they were. And, you know, maybe it was in the presentation of how the revenues were presented to them. Also, you know, I think that the spending on the Red Nine, if it stays open, you know, I think you know, that basically was laid out also. So, yeah, it was difficult to understand exactly what they were searching for.
Because if I remember, I mean, I've got the numbers at home, but I mean, the spending that we're talking about was in the 700-some thousand dollar range?
$1.3 million.
$1.3 million.
$600,000 in irrigation, $700,000 in restoration,
right,
fees. So $1.3 million. There was revenue projections starting as like $20,000, up going up to I believe that was 47 or something like that for the driving range. You know, I think Mr. Everett summed it up the best where, you know, I mean, this whole object of creating this practice range really isn't for the revenue that the range itself is going to bring in. It's for the overall facility. I mean, it's for outings that we have, such as this NCAA tournament that's coming up in September, that, you know, we have a one-year pass on it to now, but, you know, they can't use the driving range. I mean, you know, all these guys are young college kids. They're going to be, you know, hitting it way past where the driving range can contain the balls. There's nine matted stations now where, you know, if you bring in 160 players for the golf outing and they all, you know, and even a quarter of them want to hit range balls, there's not going to be any opportunity for them to do that. I mean, it would take 16 waves of taking your turn to get everybody to hit some range balls. We're asking them to stop at Bristol Oaks to hit balls before they come out to Brightondale to actually play. You know, is actually how we've worked that out with the NCAA tournament. So, you know, it's just, I agree. I don't ever think that the range is in itself is going to be the money maker, is going to bring in the revenue that the Red Nine does. But overall, as a facility, I think that we're going to be able to maintain our expenses better by closing those four or five holes, and we're going to be able to present it as an overall operation where it's going to be more presentable as a 36-hole with a whole facility and a practice facility to help grow the golfers in the area, not only for the county courses, but for all the other courses in the area. You know, it's going to help with the junior programs, the ladies' clinics, the beginner clinics, the couples clinics, family clinics, you know, everything that goes around with growing more golfers. So It was difficult. We've discussed it with as a staff, you know, to see what else the finance committee really was desired, because a lot of work was put into, you know, creating projections and costing of the driving range, and we do not have any, you know, schematic plans done by anybody. You know, but we have had talks with the architect as to, you know, what it would cost and that type of thing. So.
Well, an alternative here, we had, and I know Supervisor Getz was against some portions of this, but this resolution that we brought to the Finance Committee was leaving, you know, openings and leaving openings for debate at the County Board. What we're saying here is to keep the golf course open for the 2012 season and have the staff look into costs. Potentially outsourcing the operations for the food and alcohol, analyze, make recommendations, and implement those proposals in the velocity study, to operate both courses for the concession areas as budgeted for 2012, and develop a plan for enhancing the practice facilities at Brighton Hill Links, recommends appropriate funding in the 2013 budget. And we recommended the closing of the Red Nine in the 2013 season. Now that went, that's what went to finance. So the option for this committee is to just send this to the County Board. Let the County Board decide. Or we sit and go through some other options. Supervisor Getz?
I think that the whole thing is too vague. I think that whole resolution is too vague. And I would like to see, if we're going to come back with something, let's put a comprehensive plan together. Let's get a schematic of what this practice facility is actually going to look like and what you're going to do with the balance of the holes that you're not going to use. I mean, just to say that in 2013 you're going to close the Red Nine and then we're going to talk about putting a practice facility in doesn't make any sense. Because you're taking the revenue away without having anything to replace it.
We're losing money then. We're not taking any revenue away.
Well, we're not actually. How do we know that? We don't really know that.
Well, yes, we do. Lost 200 and some thousand this year.
But we don't know what this season is going to be.
Yes, we do.
Well, maybe you do, but I certainly don't.
Well. I think everyone knows what the season's going to be.
Well, the point she's making is there's revenue. It's just that our expenses exceed the revenue. So anybody
wants to
say, well, we're losing money. What Supervisor Gantz is saying is that there is revenue coming in, and there still will be revenue coming in, provided you have an operating facility, but it will change under the circumstance if you do something different. So I don't know if that really clarifies it.
I mean, why take the revenue away until you come up with a comprehensive plan that everybody agrees on to take over that area and show us what it's going to look like and make it so that everybody understands where it's going to go, and then the county board can make a good fiscal decision on whether or not this is the way to go and if we should put that money in the 2013 budget or not. I mean, they're not going to decide that on just without having some kind of a plan or a schematic in front of them to see what it's going to look like.
You realize this decision will be taken right out of your hands by the county board. We have to not say there's going to be another plan done that'll cost $67,000 and we're going to save $73,000 by doing less maintenance on that course. I don't need someone to draw a plan to show me what grass looks like when it's not mowed after 6 months.
It's not just grass. It's a whole area out there.
It hooks right into the park. And that's been explained to this committee how that would work. We've seen the picture of the three holes and the practice facility.
I've not seen the picture of the three holes on the practice facility. Have you?
I saw it once.
Well, maybe we need to resurrect that and get it back out and show people what we're talking about and what you're going to do with the balance of the halls that you're not going to use in the practice facility.
Well, that's been discussed also.
Okay, what are they going to do with them?
It's going to go into the park. It hooks right to the park.
And what's the park going to do with them?
They're walking trails, those nice new paved paths. I'm not being glib, but I mean
But that's what it should say in this document. I mean, basically, I don't think that the finance committee was against this. They're just saying, like, this is not spelled out enough. This last portion right here, Kenosha County Supervisors Direct Call Commission to develop a plan for potentially outsourcing concession operations. I think one of the comments was, well, are you going to outsource them or not? We don't want the, you know, might, could, should, would.
Right.
You know, tell us what you're doing. Give us a proposal.
So then,
I think if we took this and basically reworked it, we could have a document we could live with.
We'll rewrite it. There's going to be a whole different finance committee, in 2 weeks. So,
this committee too.
Yeah. Right. So Dan, if we could at our next meeting have those plans of the, you know, the Red Nine and the.
Sir.
And I will take it from there. Is that good?
At this point, whatever's on here is of no value. Even if you took out some of the bid for the resolve things, because it wouldn't really accomplish anything.
Yeah, we can rewrite this.
Yeah.
We've got to address this, though.
Yeah.
We all know that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. One way or another.
It's just maybe less is better.
Yeah. It could be next month. It could be the next month. Yeah. So.
So you want the existing map that we had of the, you know, what it is now, what the future looked like that we showed last time.
Yep.
I think I even go to addressing, you know, something as far as street signage goes. I mean, you got how many cars counted on every 75? Right there.
You want this thing? You don't
have to. And practice facility. You know, something where you're going to basically have a public relations campaign to support the practice facility.
So we'll just start from that way.
Okay.
And then we'll rewrite and go from there. So then, new business call. Director's report.
We've called all the past groups for 2012, and we put out an opening day press release, attended the golf show in Milwaukee. The golf show in Milwaukee was very successful. We ended about 35,000 to 4,000 coupons out there, had many outing league and season pass inquiries. Great enthusiasm there, and ever since we were able to open up the Brightondale Links on March 10th, we were able to open up Petrifying Springs on March 13th. The back nine at Petrifying Springs was a little bit too wet to open up that golf course on March 10th. So we had we're way ahead of last year. I mean, last year we didn't get to open until April 1st, and. And then in 2010, we didn't get open until March 18th. We're about $110,000 net ahead of last year, which about $35,000 is in past sales. So that might even out as we go forward. But it's really a great start to the season. We've been working on getting all the leagues signed up. We've added two new leagues at Petrifying Springs. A lot of league inquiries with South Hills closing, bringing new leagues on. But Pets is completely full. We've worked hard to get people to move to Brightondale. It's just difficult to get them to make the drive out there. I don't think there was one league inquiry that we didn't try and push west, and it just was difficult. But currently, all the websites across Wisconsin and our websites are all updated with rates and our specials. We've been doing email blasts, every week. And right now we have about 6,500 good emails plus all the county emails and you guys get. So we have at least 7,000 email addresses that we're blasting out to. Right now, so I think that's really going to help. The food and beverage staff is just getting rave reviews on the new cooking equipment that we installed at Brightdale. Everybody's really enjoying the grill and the charbroiler. So we're planning on opening up the fish fry for April 13th. And we just received the keg coolers for tap beers at both facilities. So we will be offering tap beer, and that'll be all set up by the first fish fry for sure. So we're trying to get that up for this weekend, but for sure by next Friday we'll have the tap beer operating. And then all the projects out at Brightdale. We're doing the irrigation project on the White Birch. Currently, we have all the 4, 6, and 8-inch pipes that needed to be put in the ground. So we are getting into the smaller piping, the 2.5 and 3-inch pipes. All the irrigation will be done on 16 of the 18 holes on the White Birch by, you know, the date is June 15th. So we are ahead of schedule on that now due to the nice weather. We're trying to work with Gary and the highway department to get the paving started. I mean, as soon as the asphalt plants open May 1st, we're ready for them to come out and do the end-to-end paving on the cart pass out at Brightdale. So we're very excited about getting that done. We're also accepting quotes right now. I think we've gotten 4 from anywhere from $8,800 to $12,400 on the roof for Petrifying Springs maintenance shop, so we're doing that. So everything is rolling really good. I mean, just the people's comments so far about the course conditions, and you know, they can't believe it's April 2nd and we got, you know, better golf course conditions than they've ever remembered. And you know, it's the fairways are just phenomenal, and the greens are rolling really nice. All the aerification that we did last fall is all healed up, and everybody's just really, really excited about this golf season. So hopefully with this big kickoff that we've had, you know, and being 110,000 ahead of last year already, hopefully we can keep that rolling and make the difference this year. So I'm looking forward to it.
Did you have a final tally? What the number was last year? What our loss ended up being?
I do not.
Next week to the finance committee, they'll be presenting they make a calculation of the golf deficit, which is a cash flow. And in 2010, that deficit was 343,000. And the deficit for 2011 is 369,000.
So it's not the 250?
Well, a deficit is different than what an accounting profit would be. Right. And what the finance department uses is this cash flow methodology.
Gotcha.
And I verified those two numbers with them today based on your question, Supervisor Palmer.
Is that calculating in the health insurance that the finance puts back in?
It's everything.
So forth? Because they allocated that to Brookside and it changed the, you know, we found that out today because the allocations of the $2.8 million in insurance was spread out over the county, so the number moved up a little bit for Brookside. It had to change for golf and everybody else too.
This is the final. Well, it's unaudited, but it's the number they have as of today. Okay. And for those of you on the finance committee, you should see that number next Thursday.
And that includes P&I on the Brighton deal expense.
Any cash? So yes, debt service.
So if we broke it down, we'll see the whole spreadsheet.
Yes.
Anything else?
Is that what you needed? Because I know you.
I was just wanting to get total.
But you know, as Dan said, we're $100,000 up, and everybody that does any outdoor work is up. So we could stay that way. You know, we could build on that. You don't know. You just don't know. We have a bad rainy holiday weekend. What do you lose, Dan? $50,000?
Oh, yeah. Easily.
Well, yep. So, you know, the opposite of that happened last summer, and I wasn't really thinking about it because I'm not a golfer. But in July, it died because it was too hot, too dry.
Sure. Right.
And so everything's a delicate balance.
It was a slow spring. Yeah.
If I could just ask, you know, I mean, you guys are getting comments and from the golfers and from other people concerned about the Red 9. you know, we came up with some verbiage across our staff, you know, at the golf courses, telling everybody, you know, that, I mean, what's needed is people to support the golf courses. They need to come out and play, have fun, have the dinner, you know, use the food and beverage, use the restaurant, and also, you know, let you know at the county board level. I mean, you know, I mean, if you're disturbed about losing the opportunity to play the Red Nine, what has to happen is you've got to go and tell the people that are running it.
And we need those same people that have called people here to show up at the county board.
Right.
Exactly.
So we've been telling everybody, we've been getting an unbelievable amount of concerned citizens to at the counters.
Anything else, Ray?
As long as we got the parking right thing, that's one thing I forgot to get on there. But I'll have that as an agenda item for sure next week.
Motion to adjourn, second by Supervisor Fetter. Good luck, everybody, tomorrow who has elections.
I'm not in the polling.
All of the favors say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, see the governance.
Who's got a special phone?